in St. Louis, but God is good.
That's right, all the time. All the time, God is good. That's right. Okay, Reverend Barr, now you wrote an autobiography called The Hoodlum Preacher. Now, let me say this. My I can't even call him my intern anymore because he's a part-timer now, but Shel Smooth brought this to my attention about you and your story. You were apparently a young preacher.
Right.
You became hooked on dope.
Uh-huh.
You were a con artist.
Correct.
Drug dealer.
Uh-huh.
Cheating husband.
You got me.
And you stole from the church collection plate.
Yeah, that too.
Damn it, Reverend. Well, that's a lot of... that's a lot of stuff.
Can you say that?
Well, let's talk about that because, wow! Okay, when you were a preacher, you were a dope fiend?
Actually, what happened was, I, as you said, I was called into ministry at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was 16 years old. I was 17 when I was licensed and ordained. But it was age 20 that I had left the church. I had backslid, and then that was when I had gotten strung out on drugs. And it was sometime later when I was trying, when I got back into the church, when I wasn't really delivered from the drill thing yet, that I'd gone back to the pulpit, and then that's when I was preaching, but I was still doing the drills and still running the streets and doing the thieving and the conning and all of that.
Wow. Now, was there ever a time, this is just the obvious question though, but was there ever a time when you were in the pulpit and you were high?
Yes, it was.
Ooh, Reverend.
Yeah.
Ooh, Reverend. They gonna get you? Okay, so talk about that. Like, I realized you were young.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, wow.
Yeah, but, you know, again, it was time that I had come back to the church. Actually, I'd gone to church one day, and that was the only time that I was out and doing drills and running con and everything. I'd been out for a while. And one day, I decided to go back to church one Sunday, along with one of my girlfriends. I went to the church where the pastor had known me, but I guess he didn't know that I had left. And when he saw me sitting in the audience, he said, I think we have a guest preacher out there, Reverend Barr. He called me to the pulpit, which was shocking me, because I hadn't been in church or the pulpit for, at that time, about 16 to 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my pistol with me, you know, but I took my gun with me everywhere. But then after church, I went and joined church, and I was thinking, well, maybe this might be the beginning of my turnaround. But, you know, and my thinking at the time, okay, since I'm back in church, I guess I'm supposed to be preaching again. So I just started calling myself Reverend Barr again and started preaching. But at that time, I was still doing drugs and still selling drugs, still doing the same thing. But I was going to church and in the pulpit on Sunday. And there were times that I was called upon to preach the sermon. And, you know, and I was, sometimes I was still half from the night before or earlier that day.
Well, you had to be getting high with people. Like, you know, there weren't people who knew, like, you know, the Reverend getting high. Were there members of the congregation or anybody
who... You know, there was a couple of them, but I was always trying to stay away from the church crowd. But there was a couple of times that I'd run into, you know, some people who would know me. Because I remember one time I was walking out of one of the dope houses, and this guy looked at me and said, what's up, brother? And I looked at him and I thought, okay, this guy looks familiar. And he said, was the dope good? And then I said, oh, man, the guy from the church.
Oh, my God. Reverend Barr, this is, wow. This is, you know what? I don't think I've ever heard a story like yours before. So when Shel brought it to me, he was like, yeah, this preacher used to get, you know, he was high and he would preach. And I was like, wow, like, what, you know? And you know, we talked about other things in your life. And this is great that you have this story, mm-hmm. Because there are, you know, people who are going to hear this today and learn from it. Tell me how you managed to be arrested over 30 times, and you only managed to spend, like, what, 2 years in jail?
Well, the 2 years, well, I was arrested so many times. Like I said, my drug addiction went over a 22-year period, and a lot of the arrests were, some were overnight, some were when I was in the military. I went to prison 3 times. Once was on the parole violation. I had 3 special court marshals when I was in the Marines. In fact, I joined the Marines to keep from going to jail. When I was 23 years old, but I ended up going to jail when I was in the Marines because of the same life that I was living on the street before I had joined the Marines. I was doing the same thing, and I was running con games there too. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the rest was during my military career. I was in the Marines for 5 years, and a lot were after, but they were all drug related. Some were just overnight things, or sometimes I spent a few weeks, and the longest that I spent was, it was a 2-year sentence for theft.
Okay, all right, and you know, when we talk about the fact that you took drugs, like you took every illegal drug, like you did PCP, you did heroin, you did coke, you did crack, you did marijuana, and you still are struggling with an addiction to alcohol.
I was for a long time, even after I left the other drugs alone, I was still struggling with alcohol. And even when I got back in church and was doing well and for the life, it was still the thing with the alcohol. You know, because alcohol is one thing that unfortunately a lot of people don't see as a drug.
Yeah.
Because it's legal. You can get it anywhere, you know. And so when I got the heroin and the cocaine and the crack alone, I was still drinking for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Now that's I got to get back to the drugs part, because these things, the drugs that you did aren't easily like acquired, and you can't kick the habit like that, like you know. Heroin and crack, like, wow. But you managed to do that.
Yeah, it was a process. I had to be honest with myself, you know, and you know, you hear people saying when they hit rock bottom, and I had, you know, several times over, you know, and there were so many times that I got on my back porch and saw the needle branch off of the back porch into the alley, and you know, and then, you know, and 15, 20 minutes later, I was out of the alley, you know, in the dark with a big cigarette lighter, you know, my hands and knees trying to find it so I can
wow.
Smoke again, you know, and I was wondering, why won't you help me? Well, I'm tired of this, you know, but then I just wasn't being honest with myself, and one thing I did learn was that in order to leave that lifestyle, you have to come away from the people who are you're hanging with. You see, I was trying to quit doing drugs, but I was still hanging with the same guys that I was getting out with. You know, that don't work.
Right. But, like, I think, like, just you coming forward with your story, I think that's very commendable. But the simple fact that a lot of preachers are doing some of these same things you just never hear about because they'll never tell about it. And not only that, but sometimes you get tired of sitting up under the perfect preacher, or the preacher that seems to be perfect, or the preacher that's portraying himself as perfect, because he can't relate to anything. Everything, if he's lived a holy life his entire life, the things that you're coming with and dealing with, they can't relate to any of that. You know what I'm saying? You know, and that's funny, because I was about to ask about the fact that you've done all these things. What does your congregation say about that? Like, are they, you know, because there are some people who want their preacher to be perfect, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I'm not a pastor. Matter of fact, I'm associate minister of one of the churches here in St. Louis, Westside Baptist Church. And I'm always giving my testimony. Matter of fact, most of my sermons, parts of my testimony are in the sermons that I preach. Because what most I do live in jail and prison. I do preach in churches, and I talk at youth rallies, youth revivals. In fact, the circuit attorney here, his prosecutor uses me to speak to children, the fourth graders. But to answer your question, though, a lot of people who are in the church, now there are some who used to kind of look at me kind of funny when they first started hearing my story, you know, but I've been in the church now for 13 years. And so they know me now, and they know the background, and so but they look at me as someone who can relate to a lot of people. And the ministry that I do, that's who I minister to. I minister to the people who are who live street life. And so I'm effective with them. And that's why the people in the jails and the prisons, I connect with them. They connect with me because they know that where they are, I've been there.
I have a question. How familiar are you with the rapper Mate?
I've never met him. I've heard of him. I've never met him.
Okay, well, going back to what you're saying about certain people that you hang around, like, what are your feelings about, you know, he's obviously still a minister. I think he's still a minister of a church in Atlanta. However, you know, lately he's been on songs with G-Unit, other people, and I actually heard a new song recently he had with the Young Guns where he is using the N-word. I don't know how you feel about that. Using the N-word and making references to, I guess, killing people, like, but he's still a minister. Like, going back to, like, hanging out with certain crowds, like, what are your feelings of that?
Okay,
or do you think it's just a nice tactic that he's using to try to minister towards other people?
I don't know. It might be that I'm not familiar. I'm not familiar with what it is he's talking about.
Right. But I'm just trying to see if you knew.
You know who Project Pat is?
I've heard of him. Matter of fact, I think
Project Pat gave you a review.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's a lot of people who read my book that I never met.
Okay. I guess that's true. Okay, so. Okay, yeah, I know. McCray. Reverend, let's talk about the fact that I want to get back to some of your grimier times in your life. Let's talk about your first wife.
Okay.
Because I like you now, but I don't think I would have liked you then. Because apparently you were beating her, right?
Right. I was an entirely different person at that time, we have a friendly relationship now. She's from the Detroit area. I think she lives in Champaign now. And at that time, I was a lousy father, a rotten husband. I had the wrong idea of what a husband was supposed to be like. And I was running the street life. I got married too young, and
how old were you?
I was 20.
Oh yeah, why? Okay, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and I was a lousy father, and I'm glad I have a beautiful relationship with my daughter now, and my grandchildren. But at that time, I was, people at that era thought that, that's what men do. They get beat the women. They wrap their wives around, their girlfriends around. That was what I saw my father do. That was what I saw my uncles do. That's what I saw all the other men in the neighborhood do. So that's what I thought that happened.
Hmm. Okay. So, like, standing where you stand now and looking back in retrospect, do you think that, like, there should be an age limit on becoming an ordained minister? Like, maybe they up the age or have some age requirements? Just because you, at 16, you haven't quite experienced everything, so it's hard to make that mature decision versus when you're older. So, do you think there should be an age limit?
No, I don't think there has to be an age limit, but I think that there should be training. During that time, if you would just tell someone that you would call to be a preacher, then they would just give you a date to preach a trial sermon, and they accepted you with that. Right now, I think, for instance, my pastor, if you tell him that God's called you to preach, there's a 1 or 2 or 3 year process that you go through through before, he puts you up to preach before anyone. You know, he's seen there's a lot of grilling questions, you know, and there's a lot of things that you have to go through. But before he licenses you, he wants to make sure that you are walking the walk and that you're ready to do what you say that God called you to do, because you're representing God. And so when I ask the question, I believe that now there shouldn't be an age limit, but the pastor who you are under can make sure that you are ready for that.
Mm-hmm. All right, 680-730-1021. We're going to take some calls before we have to let Reverend Barr go. Reverend Barr, I was reading, I know you heard the big controversy about the memoir Oprah picked out. And had the guy on her
show,
A Million Little Pieces, and the guy was on her show, and it turns out, you know, he was fabricating a lot of, you know, stories, things, and accounts of his life.
Right.
And you know, that kind of stuff sells. Now, people shouldn't feel that way about your memoir, right? We don't have to worry about you, fabricating any parts of your life.
No, everything that I wrote in my book is verifiable. Matter of fact, that's why, that's not the reason, because I had already written my book before that it come out. It just hadn't been put out yet. But when I talk about me going to jail or going to prison, I give my inmate number and also what prison I was incarcerated in. When I talk about that kind of discharge and the court marshals, you know, all that stuff, people can verify that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the stuff that I talk about, it's very easy for you or anyone else to find out that, this is documented. So he did this.
All right, 680-730-1021. A couple more calls. Please turn your radio all the way down when you do call. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I think that there should be an age limit. I want to ask him, like, don't you think that there are lessons in life to be learned, and, you know, that's going to help you apply and teach the knowledge when you're older, you know, that a kid, a 16, 17, 18, 23-year-old wouldn't even know. And there's verses in the Bible that a young person doesn't know or doesn't get, and then when they get older, they get it. You know what I mean? You grow with it. You grow with the Bible. You learn with the Bible. And if you're a young preacher, there's lessons that you're not going to have yet that you haven't learned yet. I don't think that's beneficial.
Did you hear anything you just said, Reverend Barr? Hello?
Yeah.
Reverend Barr? Oh, damn it. That was me. I did that. Reverend Barr, okay. Sorry, I have to do this. Yeah.
When I was 10, and I felt at that time God had called me to do that because of that moment, I didn't really have a deep understanding of what was really going on. And a girlfriend of mine, she joined it right before I did, and it's like my eyes opened up to what was really going on. But I believe if you keep your eyes open, then, you know, God can call you to be anything. He can call anybody.
Okay.
There's no certain age limit to it.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day. 680 or 730-1021. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if we're still on the topic of the N-word or are we just discussing the Reverend.
No, we're talking about the Reverend at the moment, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I still had comments on the Reverend as well, if that's okay.
Okay, sure.
I first like to say, Africa, I'm a huge fan. I used to listen to you on the way to high school when you were with Buster at Amos, so it's good to hear you back on the radio.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. One thing that I really wanted to say, I do think that it should be an age requirement when it comes to being a part of the ministry. I, at one point in time, was dating a young man who was in divinity school near my local university. And he was still young, not very exposed to the world, grew up in the church, etc. Became at a certain point wanting to get out and see the world and get experience that he was not able to get when he grew up in a church and had converted that also into his education. So this person became someone who was studying divinity, going to school Saturday morning and going to church on Sunday, and you know, Friday night pretty much at the club, at the bar, harder than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, in terms, I think that people should just kind of slow down, see what it is. Don't be scared into the ministry, because I think that was the situation with Faith. I feel like that's more than likely some tragic event that scared Faith into ministry, and then once he kind of got out of that, you know, shook himself out of that, now he in videos with 50 Cent hanging out with the GM.
Oh, Faith got scared in the church. That's what you're saying.
That's what I believe.
Okay.
I honestly believe. I mean, a lot of turmoil going on through the rap industry, music industry at that point. I mean, this was like during the era where Tupac died, Biggie died. He then was rushed into a whole lot of fame. I'm sure he saw a whole lot that he probably wasn't with. I mean, if we look at Mace's first album, he really wasn't about a lot, although his underground was Murder Mace. His alias was Murder Mace. Nevertheless, seemed to me as though he got scared into the ministry.
Okay.
He just totally abandoned the industry and went straight into the ministry, you know, just kind of odd. And I think after that phase was over, that's where he is at this point, being back in the industry, hanging out with, you know, the local scene. So, I mean, really, people just need to not be scared into the ministry, in my opinion, or not just grow up and feel that, all right, now that I've been a part of the church all my life, this where my life should start and end. I think people need to transition into the church, find out that they are called by God and walk into the path of God, not run and flee to the path of God.
Okay. Piggybacking on what she's saying, like, it's also, I've learned in church and also read where if there is a special place in for Christians who believe, there's a special place in hell for preachers, because they're responsible for so many people's souls. I mean, is that really, like I said before, a weight worth carrying for someone who's 16, 17, 18 years old and hasn't really experienced life, hasn't had the opportunity to go to the club or done this and done that, and then thought, okay, this isn't for me? Of course, like the lady said before, you know, there's no age limit to your calling. You know what I'm saying? God is calling. And you should answer, but at the same time, as far as taking on the responsibility of preaching, take your time into that.
Mm-hmm.
Grow into that. Because people start watching preachers, and they're much more judgmental of preachers than they are just a regular saint.
And you know what? I'm going to piggyback off for Molly real quick here, because she had said something about preachers and God,
special place in hell?
Yes, special place in hell for preachers. Thank you. So, Reverend Bart, do you feel like, you know, there is a spot reserved for you right now in hell because of what happened before, you know, with all these things that happened before when you were preaching?
Sure, he repented.
No, I believe now, and other folks in the church as well, who are in church every Sunday, and they're deacons, they're leaders of the church, you know, with in the closet, so to speak, they're closet sinners, you know, but I believe that God can work on them, and the thing is that they have to be able to step up and let people know that, hey, you know, that this is how I live, you know, but God changed me, and no one is perfect.
That's right.
And so, as a matter of fact, that's why I left the church in the first place. I was looking for a perfect church and the perfect preachers and the perfect people, and then when I found out that a lot of preachers were not perfect, the ones I put it on a pedestal,
yeah.
I got this offense as a disenchanted, and I said, well, get all of this stuff, and I had to go to the church, you know, but then, you know, people messed up. Bible says they're non-righteous, no, not one. You know, but we strive for perfection. And but then now when you do accept the call, you know, you are called to a higher standing. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you do walk in that standing.
Right. You know, Reverend Barr, I could go on and on with you, but we have run out of time. We've actually got to go. But
I'm so sorry.
I appreciate you being on with us this morning. You've been really fun, for real. You've been a great sport.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Now, you wrote the book, The Hoodlum Preacher.
Uh-huh.
I didn't come up with that name for Molly. He
okay.
named his book,
okay.
The Hoodlum Preacher. Where can people get this book? Because I have a feeling this is going to be flying off the shelves, for real.
It can be found in all of the major bookstores, especially Barnes & Noble. I've done a lot of book signings at Barnes & Noble stores. It's also on Amazon.com.
Okay, Amazon.com.
Right.
I was just reading a little bit more. It said by the mid-'80s, your drug habit was up to $500 a day.
Right, and like I said, that's just a figure. The average was about $200 a day, but there were some days that I spent well over $200. Some days I spent over $500, and there were some days I couldn't even hustle up on $100. But it was averaging $200, and sometimes it was $500 a day or more.
Wow. Now, you know who Project Pat is. You obviously know. I'm going to tell you what he said about your book. He said, "The Hoodlum Preacher helped me get through some discouraging times while being in prison. The book confirmed the fact that I can accomplish anything as long as I have faith."
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Yo, you're an inspiration for real. Like, you know, you're doing a good thing here by sharing your story and also showing people that there's hope for anything.
Yeah, and Chef Smooth said I didn't like anybody that was on today, but I really liked you. I mean,